That, however, was a conversation for another time. Tonight, he just wanted to enjoy the last hours of their summer together. Speaking of which, I also have some news. Nate cleared his throat, an uncharacteristic ripple of nerves cresting his stomach. It's been in the works, but I didn't want to say anything until I was sure. Chris's brow arched a fraction of an inch.
Okay.
I got the lead in the new Scott West movie. I found out this morning. The wind whistled by, ruffling Nate's hair and filling his nostrils with the salty scent of the sea. Fuck, it felt weird to say those words out loud. Surreal, like he was a dream version of himself. He'd been floating around in a strange bubble of this can't really be happening since he received the call from Marty. As Marty had predicted, Scott West himself had been present for the callback auditions. He didn't speak or move the entire time, but Nate had had a gut feeling that the director liked him. Or maybe he'd liked Nate's gray shirt because, yeah, gray was Scott's favorite color. Did that help seal the deal? Who knew? Who cared? Nate was going to star in a motherfucking Scott West film. It had killed him to keep the auditions secret from Chris, but he hadn't wanted to jinx anything. Now that his new role was confirmed, he wanted to scream it from the rooftops. Chris's eyes grew round.
Scott West, the Oscar-winning director, the one who makes a movie like once a decade?
He chuckled. Something like that.
Holy shit, congratulations!
Before he knew it, they were tangled together, Chris's arms and legs wrapped around his neck and waist, her lips firm and insistent on his, her scent enveloping him like the world's best-smelling blanket. Heat raced through Nate's veins, and he hissed when she ground her hips against his. He responded in sync, cupping her ass with his hands and exploring her mouth with urgent, pent-up need. "If I'd known this was how you were going to react, I would have told you sooner," he rasped when they broke for air.
"You should have." Chris nuzzled his neck. "This is incredible news. It's your big break, and you deserve it."
Another, larger ripple of nerves. It was funny. Nate had spent his entire life dreaming of stardom, but now that it was close enough for him to touch, it was scary as hell. Exciting, too, yeah. But what if he messed things up? There was nothing more nerve-wracking than having your dreams come true and not knowing how to handle it. "We don't know that," he said. "The movie could be a flop." Scott West hadn't directed a single flop in his life. The man had the Midas touch when it came to critically acclaimed blockbusters. But there was a first time for everything, and Nate didn't want to get his hopes up.
"No, it won't," Chris said firmly. "The movie's going to break records. It's going to be one of those legendary franchises that everyone lines up to see in theaters on opening day. And you're going to be the newest, hottest addition to the A-list."
He grinned at her confidence. "You have a lot of faith in Scott West."
"No, I have a lot of faith in you." "You got this."
Chris paused.
"I swear to God, if you ditch me for some up-and-coming starlet while I'm in Seattle, I'll fly back here and pin your balls to the wall."
"As you should." Nate pulled her into his chest. "Don't worry. You'll forever be my red carpet date."
"Excellent. I love dressing up in designer gowns and strutting down red carpets with arm candy."
His grin widened. "I love you, Chris Carrera." Chris ran her fingers through his hair, her eyes pools of liquid chocolate in the moonlight.
"And I love you, Nate Reynolds."
Their lips met in another kiss. It started soft and sweet, but soon escalated to a heat level that sent all of Nate's blood rushing south. He slipped his hands beneath Chris's thong and found her wet, warm, and ready. His cock pulsed, screaming at him to get a move on already. But he didn't want to rush this. They had hours before sunrise, and he was going to make good use of every second. Nate laid Chris on her back and tugged her underwear down her legs while she watched him with hot, hooded eyes. She was so beautiful it made his heart ache, and when she orgasmed around him, her head tilting back and her mouth falling open with pleasure, he knew without a doubt that his heart would never belong to him again. It was hers. Always.
Chapter 31. 4 months later. Chris, you have to stop making our sisters cry. Courtney took off her knit beanie and fluffed her thick brown curls with one hand as she sent a pointed glance in Chris's direction. Blair's a pledge. She's not officially a sister until next semester. And all I said was her haircut looks like shit. Chris slipped out of her Saint Laurent boots and flexed her feet against the plush carpet of her off-campus apartment. Finally. She'd been running around all day, doing stupid sorority shit, when all she wanted was to drink a glass of wine and finish designing the invites for Mentor's holiday fundraiser. I was being honest. It's not my fault she's so sensitive. She spent $300 on that haircut. Again, not my fault. Courtney folded her arms over her chest. You've been crankier than usual. You know Christmas cheer irritates me. Chris liked the presents and her family's annual trip to St. Bart's, but the cheesy holiday movies, ugly sweaters, and those godforsaken Christmas songs playing incessantly no matter where you went? Gag her with a spoon. And, okay, fine. She was also a teensy bit cranky because she hadn't spoken to Nate in 2 weeks. He was filming in the middle of the Nevada desert, and between the spotty cell service and his crazy work days, as well as her own packed schedule, they hadn't so much as texted since Thanksgiving. Does this mean you're not going to the Sigma party tonight? Chris grimaced. I would rather dye my hair with drugstore box color. Her friend and sorority sister laughed. I guess that's a no. But let's grab brunch tomorrow, okay? All my finals are papers, so I'm leaving Thursday. Had to prepare for the big Christmas shindig at my house. Courtney lived with her aunt, uncle, and 5 cousins. They were like a big, smiley Brady Bunch come to life, and they took their holidays seriously. Courtney owned a handmade sweater for everything from Valentine's Day to 4th of July to fucking National Pancake Day, courtesy of her aunt. Chris was convinced Courtney's aunt was a serial killer. Sure, I leave in a few days, too. Chris grabbed the arts and crafts kit Courtney had lent her from her room and returned it to her friend. She'd only rushed Theta her sophomore year because Courtney, whom she'd met and befriended at freshman orientation, had already been a member and begged her to join. She hadn't expected it to involve so much glitter. We're staying stateside this year. Surprise flitted across Courtney's face. No St. Bart's? No. My dad said I should have a normal Christmas at home, whatever that means. Chris frowned. Plus, Gemma has to stay in town for an art exhibition, and he wants us all to have dinner together. Courtney's mouth curved into a small smile. That sounds nice. I guess. It did sound nice, but Chris would never admit it. Roger had kept his word and traveled minimally in the months since they left L.A. He and Chris ate dinner together once a week, sometimes more. The Carreras mansion in Broadmoor was a short drive from campus, so it wasn't difficult. Gemma occasionally joined them. She'd rented a modest apartment not too far from Broadmoor and had converted the spare bedroom into her art studio. Chris had visited it once with Courtney, who'd freaked when she found out Chris's real mother was none other than Gemma Cruz. Apparently, Gemma was a rising star in the art world. Chris had never cared much for paintings, but she had to admit, Gemma's hyper-realistic renderings were out of this world. They'd gotten to know each other much better these past few months, but theirs wasn't a mother-daughter relationship. Yet. Roger and Gemma, though. Chris smirked when she remembered how flustered they'd looked when she'd arrived early to dinner one night and found them in the living room with their heads bent very close to each other. Clearly, their flame had rekindled after all these years. I'll see you tomorrow, Courtney smacked a kiss on Chris's cheek. Hal's Diner? Of course. Hal served the greasiest bacon and thickest milkshakes in the city. It was fantastic. Once Courtney left, Chris drew a bubble bath and put on soothing music. She sank into the bubbles, mentally going through her to-do list for the Mentor fundraiser. Even though she was in Seattle, she'd volunteered to help with their marketing and design needs in her free time. Mentor didn't have the budget for a dedicated marketing person. The work could be done remotely, and Chris missed Susan and the girls, especially Skylar. Shit. Thinking of Skylar made her think of Nate, which in turn made her depressed. Chris couldn't believe she'd turned into one of those girls who moped about when she couldn't talk to her boyfriend for a few weeks. It wasn't like Nate was ignoring her. He had a job to do. So did her vibrator, which she was going to. An incoming call interrupted the calming melody playing from her chill out Spotify playlist. Chris dried her hands with a nearby towel before reaching for her phone so she could decline the call. She did not appreciate interruptions during bath time. Until she saw the name on the screen. Her heart rate went from 5 to 500 in 0.1 second. Anticipation and pleasure kicked in, followed by a strange rush of nerves. Hey! She didn't sound like herself. Too breathless. Too excited. But she couldn't bring herself to care. Hey. Nate's whiskey voice had all her lady parts standing at attention. Her nipples puckered into diamond points, and moisture that had nothing to do with her bath slicked her core. Yes, she was that sexually frustrated. What are you up to? Chris leaned back, not bothering to suppress the giant smile spreading across her face. I'm taking a bath. There was a pause. Really? It wasn't a question, and Nate's voice had gone from whiskey to gravel. Mm-hmm. It came out as a purr. Chris placed him on speaker, set the phone on the porcelain rim, and leaned her head back until it rested on the waterproof cushion she'd fixed to the head of the tub. Ask me what else I'm doing. What else are you doing? A pleasurable ripple of goosebumps erupted all over her flesh, following Nate's low growl. I'm thinking of you and me, fucking in the tub. Chris closed her eyes and slipped one hand between her thighs, while the other played with her aching nipples. Usually they didn't jump straight into the phone sex. They'd catch each other up first, on Chris's classes, on Nate's shoot progress. They'd share funny stories, lingering doubts and nightmares, and little things that had irritated them or made them smile since they spoke last. Like Chris being forced to dance and dress up as a Spice Girl for one of her sorority events. Damn Courtney. At least Chris had snagged the posh Spice role. And Nate nailing one of his scenes in one take. But it had been 2 weeks, and Chris was too impatient and frustrated to wait. Her vibrator wasn't the same without Nate's voice as an oh-so-sexy compliment. He didn't speak now, but his heavy, quickened breathing told her he was hanging on to every word she said. I'm sitting with my back against your chest, riding you. Chris could picture the scene in her head, as clear as day. Heat pooled in her belly, and she tilted her pelvis, wishing Nate was actually inside her, filling her up. Yeah? Do you like how that feels? He murmured, his question black silk over crushed ice, ripe with lust and an edge of something even more primal. Having my cock buried deep in your pussy. Absence made the heart grow fonder and the sex talk filthier, which Chris didn't mind at all. She gasped, her fingers slick with a mix of water and her juices as she rubbed furious circles on her clit. Her cheeks flushed, and her skin stretched hot and tight in arousal. Yes, she moaned. God, yes. I know you do. I bet you'll like it even more when I reach around and play with your clit and pretty nipples. As Nate detailed exactly what he'd like to do to her body, Chris arched up, her breath coming out in short pants. The bathwater had turned lukewarm, but she might as well be sitting in lava, she was so hot. Her skin burned, and heat sizzled down her spine, chasing release. So close. So close. So don't come, Nate ordered. Not yet. Chris whimpered in protest. But the sound of the doorbell broke through her fog of lust. Who the fuck was visiting her at this time of night?
Is someone at the door?
Nate asked, still in that gravelly voice. Yes, but they'll go away.
Answer it.
A pause.
Put some clothes on first.
Chris had never taken well to orders, but she couldn't deny the flutters in her stomach at Nate's territorial growl. The doorbell rang again, and she groaned. I'll be right back, she said, irritated and frustrated by both her delayed orgasm and the unwanted interruption.
I'll be here,
Nate drawled. Chris splashed out of the tub and wrapped herself in a fluffy, thousand-thread-count Egyptian cotton robe before padding into the living room. She opened the door, ready to give whoever was on the other side a piece of her mind. Instead, her jaw dropped, and her mind blanked. Nate grinned, looking sexier than ever. He'd bulked up for the movie, and his tan had deepened from all the hours spent shooting in the desert. His eyes glittered like cut emeralds against his bronzed skin, and they zeroed in on Chris with the heat and intensity of a nuclear missile. What? How?
Figured we should finish our conversation in person,
he explained with a slow, sexy smile.
As much as I love our dirty talk sessions, I like the feel of you coming around my cock even more.
Chris's knees weakened. There'd be time for questions and answers later. Right now, she needed him inside her. ASAP. Come here. She grabbed a fistful of his shirt and yanked him toward her. Their mouths and bodies clashed with an urgency that could only exist between lovers who'd been deprived of each other's company for too long. Her robe dropped to the floor. His shirt flew off and landed on a nearby lamp. His jeans followed.
Want to make it to the bathroom to finish the fantasy, but don't think I can wait that long,
Nate mumbled, his stubble rasping against her skin as he trailed kisses down her throat. We'll do the bathroom later. In the meantime, Chris backed up until her thighs hit the couch. This is fine.
More than fine.
In fact, when Nate thrust into her at the same time his mouth reclaimed hers, it was perfect.
Chris and Nate made up for lost time in every room of the house before they ended their marathon in her bedroom, panting and boneless from multiple orgasms. Hey, Nate smiled down at her, rubbing a lock of silky, multi-toned hair between his fingers. Every time they saw each other, they fucked like it had been years and talked like no time had passed. The days apart were hell, but the reunions were glorious. Hey, Chris stretched and let out a lazy yawn before snuggling up to him again. Now, are you going to tell me what the hell you're doing here? He laughed and pressed a kiss to the top of her head. We wrapped up the desert shoot early. Production will pick back up in L.A. after the holidays, but I thought I'd surprise you before I headed home. Nate had missed her with every fiber of his being. Sure, he was enjoying the hell out of his first shoot as the lead, despite the hellish desert heat, the 16-hour days, and the eccentricities of Scott West. He loved acting and everything that went along with it. He'd had to quit his job at the cafe because, as accommodating as Elijah's dad was, you couldn't disappear for months at a time and expect to keep your gig. Nate had been surprisingly bummed. He'd liked his co-workers at Alchemy. But the rush and adrenaline once he arrived on set helped. There was nothing like stepping into the role of someone else, of being so immersed in that character who lived lives you'd never had. He hoped the audience would connect with the story as much as he did when the movie aired in theaters. Being able to escape into a fantasy world, one where the good guy wins, the bad guy gets what he deserves, and the romantic interests live happily ever after, was a refreshing break from reality. Except, for once, Nate's reality was better than fantasy. Drowsy from exertion and pleasure, with Chris in his arms and her amber scent filling his senses, this was perfection.
Too bad perfection had a time limit. How long are you staying? Chris asked, tracing her fingers over his abs. Nate's stomach muscles contracted in response, and his sex stirred, eager for round 5, or 6, or 10. He'd lost count. For the weekend, he flashed a languorous smile. I hope you don't have plans because I have a lot of fun activities for us in mind. A majority of which involved them naked and horizontal, or vertical, diagonal, whatever, he wasn't picky. Chris's eyes glittered with sensual heat.
Let me guess, brunch and yoga?
Sure. Yoga is you doing downward dog with me behind you, and brunch is me eating your pussy. Nate chuckled at the faint pink tinge on her cheeks.
When did you become so filthy?
I've always been this filthy. I just didn't show it when I was chasing you. But now that I've caught you, I'm revealing my true nature. She slanted him an arch stare.
Caught me, huh?
Yep. He was all smiles and smug male satisfaction. Same as you caught me. We're two fish in a net, tangled together for... He caught himself before he said forever. For a long, long time. Chris dissolved into laughter.
That is the worst metaphor I've ever heard.
Perhaps we should do less talking and more doing, then.
Smooth, she drawled.
She propped herself up on her elbow, her expression turning serious.
But first, I have something to tell you. Well, two things. One, I have brunch, real brunch, scheduled with Courtney tomorrow, so don't think about tying me up in bed all morning.
Nate actually pouted.
God damn it.
Two, Chris hesitated, and wariness prickled the back of his neck.
I spoke with Susan last week.
Okay. Nate knew Chris was still volunteering with Meant Her, albeit remotely. She had a gift for marketing, event planning, and fundraising, probably because she'd attended so many fundraisers herself. She knew exactly how to reach out to donors and squeeze the green from their wallets.
The organization is growing, and grants aren't enough to sustain all its operating costs. They need to step up their fundraising efforts, and they've created a new role. Director of Fundraising and Development.
A pause.
She offered me the job.
Surprise, excitement, and pride bloomed in Nate's chest. That's incredible. Chris had always talked about how dissatisfied she was with standard public relations, for Hollywood, for corporate, even for fashion. But she loved Meant Her, and this was the perfect role for her. Plus, Meant Her was in Los Angeles. His heart skipped at the thought. It was almost too much to hope for, but...
Did you accept?
Chris's lips curved into a smile.
I did. I'll continue to volunteer next semester, but my official start date as a paid employee is in June. Enough time for me to graduate and move.
To L.A.
To L.A., she confirmed,
her smile now a full-blown grin. Nate wanted to say something along the lines of, "Holy shit, are you kidding me? This is awesome." But he was afraid it would come out a jumbled mess, so he did the next best thing. He kissed Chris silly. After that, he alternated between fucking and making love to her until they were both so exhausted they couldn't move. He'd been willing to do the long-distance thing with her for however long it took. He hadn't taken it for granted that she would move to L.A. after graduation. Her family was in Seattle, and what if she found her dream job elsewhere? It was hell not seeing her every day, but she was worth the frustration and lonely nights. However, Nate hadn't known how much their physical separation weighed on him until Chris confirmed she was moving to Los Angeles. I love you, he said, tangling his fingers in that thick, gorgeous mane of brown and caramel and mahogany that he adored so much. Chris's huge brown eyes blinked up at him, as tender as he'd ever seen them.
I love you too.
They sealed their words with a searing kiss that warmed Nate to the bones. Yes, they had another 6 months of long distance left, but 6 months was nothing compared to forever. Chapter 32 4.5 years later. I'm going to tear his head off, Nate decided. That's the right thing to do.
Chris rolled her eyes, a mixture of amusement and exasperation stamped on her face.
I don't think your sister would appreciate you murdering her boyfriend on her graduation day.
Sisters never appreciate the things their brothers do for them. It's a law of siblinghood.
Nate glowered at Teague, who was chatting with Michael like he had every right to be there. The fucker was 4 years older than Skylar and annoying as ever with his blonde hair and Ralph Lauren polo. Nate had thought the blonde was all right after he helped with the Gloria thing all those years ago, but that was before Teague started dating Skylar. Nate didn't care that Skylar was 22 years old and as of today a Stanford grad with a biology degree. She was his baby sister and it was his job to protect her from privileged little shits.
He was still suspicious of how Skylar and Teague allegedly ran into each other by accident at the Grove when she came home for winter break a couple of months ago. Judging by how quickly they jumped into a full-blown relationship, he was convinced they'd been talking before then.
"Stop. Breathe. Calm down," Chris ordered. "Your sister's coming."
Sure enough, Skylar appeared in the crush of laughing, crying graduates and proud parents, her golden hair streaming behind her and her rolled-up diploma clutched in one hand. She wore the standard black graduation robes and cap, a red stole with the university seal, and a huge grin. Some of the tension eased from Nate's shoulders. It was hard to be upset when she looked so happy.
"You made it!"
She tackled Nate first, as bubbly as ever. He laughed, squeezing her so hard he lifted her off the ground. "Wouldn't miss this for the world." He was so damn proud of her. Keeping up with her classes, internships, and soccer at a school like Stanford was tough as hell, and it wasn't like he, a college dropout, could coach her through it. But Skylar had handled it all with poise, aside from the occasional lapse in judgment, like that time she'd inhaled 2 pot brownies at a frat party and called Nate at 2 in the morning rambling about Aristotle and Taco Bell. Chris had helped, too, guiding Skylar through the pitfalls of college and early adulthood, not because Skylar had been her mentee, but because the two had developed a true sisterly bond. Sometimes it was too sisterly. If Nate had a dime for every time they'd ganged up on him, he wouldn't need to work another day in his life. Skylar greeted their father next, followed by Chris. Nate was gratified to see Teague was the last in the receiving line, though the gratification morphed into disgruntlement when the little shit kissed Skylar on the lips.
"Come on."
There was laughter in Chris's voice when she spotted the scowl on his face.
"Let's take some pictures."
Nate grunted his agreement. His fist could meet Teague's face later. They shuffled around until Skylar had posed with everyone in their group in various groupings.
"Family pick last."
Chris held up her phone and gestured for Nate to join Michael and Skylar beneath an oak tree. Once the photo shoot was over, they huddled around her and scrolled through the pictures, laughing at the ones where Skylar pulled a funny face or Nate made bunny ears above her head.
"Very mature,"
Skylar said, playfully punching his arm.
"I thought you outgrew that prank in middle school."
"Old habits die hard," he quipped,
but he fell silent when the last photo came up. It was a normal photo, just him, his sister, and his father standing together beaming at the camera. But it was its ordinariness that made it special. The Reynoldses looked like your average functional American family, and miracle of miracles, the appearance matched reality. Michael was strong and healthy, going on 5 years sober. He thrived as a construction site manager and lived in their old house in North Hollywood, which Nate had bought outright after the check from his first film cleared. He'd offered to upgrade his old man's digs, but Michael refused, saying he didn't need a big old house when he lived by himself. He spent his weekends fishing and watching sports with friends or working on home improvement projects. He said it kept him busy, though Nate heard through the grapevine, aka Skylar, that Michael had started dating again. She claimed she'd seen their father on an online dating site over the holidays and that she'd overheard his whispered conversations with a woman named Diana. Clearly, Michael wasn't comfortable telling his children he was dating again, and Nate wasn't going to push him. He and Skylar were on the same page when it came to their father's love life. No details needed, thank you. But Michael deserved to find happiness again.
No one could ever replace their mom, but Joanna Reynolds had died almost a decade ago, and she would have wanted them to move on. Skylar, meanwhile, was enjoying life as much as a 22-year-old could. She'd graduated magna cum laude, and she was leaving for Thailand in a few weeks for a gap year in Southeast Asia before putting her biology degree to good use as an environmental scientist. Teague was joining her for the first half of her trip, which ground Nate's gears, but he'd long given up on trying to tell Skylar what to do. For all her smiles and bubbliness, she could be stubborn as a mule. Chris said the stubbornness proved Skylar and Nate were related, given they looked so different. Nate, in retaliation, had pinned Chris beneath him and had his way with her, keeping her on edge for an hour until she'd apologized and begged for release. That had been a fun night.
"Excuse me?"
The shy voice tore Nate from his stroll down X-rated memory lane. The speaker, a brunette clad in the same graduation paraphernalia as Skylar, stared at him with starry eyes and pink cheeks.
"I'm sorry to interrupt, but are you Nate Reynolds?"
Nate shifted gears and flashed the smile he reserved for fans. Friendly but professional. Charming but not flirtatious. "Yep." The girl squealed in excitement, the stars in her eyes multiplying.
"Do you mind if I get a picture? I'm sorry, I know this isn't the best time, but I am your biggest fan. I watched Triple Vendetta in the theater 3 times.
"Sure," Nate said easily, earning himself another squeal. The girl shoved her phone into what had to be her mother's hand. They had the same hair color and similar features, and grinned so hard he was surprised her face didn't crack. After that, the floodgates opened and everyone in the vicinity wanted a picture, an autograph, a handshake. Nate indulged most of them, but after the 13th or 14th meet and greet, he politely excused himself, saying he needed to return to his family. As his impromptu fan circle dissipated, Nate found Chris, Teague, and his family staring at him with varying degrees of grins and smirks.
"My brother, the big action star," Skylar said dramatically. "I should sell embarrassing baby photos of you on eBay for extra cash."
"Do it, and I'm impounding your car," Nate threatened. He'd bought Skylar a BMW as a belated graduation-slash-congrats-on-getting-into-Stanford present with the proceeds from his first movie. She gasped.
"You wouldn't.
Try me."
"Fine," she pouted. "No baby pics for sale. But the BMW better still be here when I come back from Asia."
"Only if you check in at least twice a week and bring back one of those lanterns from Vietnam. They look cool as fuck. Sorry," Nate added when his father frowned at the F-bomb. Michael shook his head and sighed.
"How do you put up with him?" Skylar asked Chris.
Chris laughed.
"I have my ways."
The youngest Reynolds wrinkled her nose.
"I don't want to know."
They hung around on campus for a while longer. Skylar seemed to have separation anxiety and stared at every building, tree, and shrub with sad, nostalgic eyes before heading out for lunch. Nate fell into step with Teague while Chris, Skylar, and Michael debated where to eat. "Break her heart and I'll break your face, to start," Nate said without preamble. His smile came off more threatening than friendly. "Got it?" Teague appeared amused.
"Understood. You don't have to worry. I'd rather die than hurt Sky."
"Good, because that's what's going to happen if she so much as sheds a tear over you." The other man chuckled, and Nate debated the merits of punching him in the face even though he technically hadn't done anything wrong, except breathe and exist. Oh, and date Nate's sister.
"You and Chris seem to be in a good place," Teague said. "I haven't seen her this happy in, well, ever."
Nate's smile widened until he was all but baring his teeth.
"We are, so don't get any ideas."
"I'm not."
Teague's own smile was wry.
"I really like Skylar, and Chris and I have always just been friends."
"Really?" It wasn't a question.
"Trust me, I don't feel for her that way, and it's mutual. I remember telling you the same thing during that summer I took you guys up in my plane."
"I didn't believe you then, and I only half believe you now. Anyway, I'm not worried about Chris." Chris, Nate trusted 100%. Teague, not so much, whether it was with his sister or the love of his life.
"I know, But the way you feel about Chris? That's how I feel about Sky, Teague said. So with all due respect, you can snap at me all you want, but nothing you say or do is going to drive me away. I understand you want to protect your sister, but she's a grown woman capable of making her own decisions. I also want you and me to be on good terms, both for Sky's sake and because you seem like a decent guy when you're not snapping at me. If I hurt her for any reason, and I swear I'd never willingly do so, you can come at me with all you got. But for now, let's shelve the overprotective brother routine, yeah?
Nate could count on one hand the number of times he'd been this surprised. He was torn between two reactions. One, break Teague's face as he'd said he would do earlier. Or two, a laugh rumbled out of his chest, quietly at first, and then loud enough that the trio walking ahead of them glanced back with curiosity. A grin split Skylar's face when she saw what was happening, and Chris's eyes twinkled before she said something that diverted the other woman's attention.
"You're okay," Nate said, clapping Teague on the back. He still didn't like the guy, but at least his sister's boyfriend had balls. That deserved some respect. Plus, it didn't escape Nate's attention that Teague's words sounded quite familiar. He had given Chris's father his version of the same speech 4 years ago. By the time he and Chris returned to their hotel that night, Nate had forgotten all about Teague. They'd spent the day with Skylar, first lunch, then a spontaneous mini-golf excursion followed by dinner and drinks. Chris had grimaced at the mini-golf idea, but followed through with it like a champ. The sight of her handling a putter had been hot as hell.
"I recommend you take up mini-golf as a hobby," Nate said, watching Chris undress with hooded eyes. "Preferably in one of those short golf skirts."
"In your dreams," Chris teased.
Her ring flashed beneath the lights as she unhooked her bra and the scrap of black lace drifted to the ground. Nate hardened immediately, both at the sight of her breasts and the ring on her finger. It was a 5-carat pear-shaped Harry Winston diamond, Chris's dream ring, according to both her mother and Courtney. After years of making up for lost time, Gemma and Chris had developed a true mother-daughter bond, and Courtney was one of Chris's oldest friends. As a result, Nate trusted their intel implicitly. Good thing Scott West's triple vendetta featuring none other than Nate Reynolds had been such a blockbuster hit. Enough that it had gotten the franchise greenlit, and Nate had signed a 4-movie contract with enough zeros to make his eyes water. That, plus the endorsement deals that flooded in after Nate was branded Hollywood's hottest new star, made purchasing the 5-carat diamond a drop in the bucket. He'd popped the question in Italy after he and Chris snuck off to the Amalfi Coast when the principal production for the Triple Vendetta sequel in Rome wrapped. After years of exposure therapy, Nate had gotten over his fear of flying. He got nervous whenever there was turbulence and his stomach hitched with each ascent, but that was nothing compared to his earlier aerophobia. Nate still remembered every detail of the proposal, the dress Chris wore, her expression when he'd dropped to one knee, the sound of the waves lapping against the shore in the distance when she said yes and tackled him with a kiss. It had been the best night of his life. Chris climbed into bed and snuggled into his arms.
"If you're really nice to me, maybe I'll wear a short golf skirt during our honeymoon," Chris murmured. "As long as we don't actually play golf."
Nate chuckled and stroked her soft skin, her scent burrowing into his nose and shooting straight down to his cock. "Trust me, golf is nowhere on my honeymoon itinerary." Their wedding wouldn't happen for at least another 2 or 3 years. They'd both agreed to a long engagement for multiple reasons, including Nate's crazy filming schedule and Chris's equally busy calendar, juggling her roles as director of fundraising for Meant Her and board president for the Joanna Reynolds Scholarship Foundation for low-income high school students. Chris and Nate had established the foundation last year. He'd contributed some money, but the bulk of its funding came from Chris's trust fund, which had paid out when she turned 23, despite his threats. Her father had never changed the terms after he found out about Chris's scheme to frame Gloria for infidelity. While they'd both had a hand in shaping the foundation's goals, hiring its staff, and building out the logistics, Chris was the one who kept it running like a well-oiled machine. In fact, she'd been the one who'd suggested starting a scholarship fund for high schoolers whose families couldn't afford college in memory of his mother. That was the night Nate knew, deep within his gut, that this woman was his forever. He'd known it for a while, but that was the first time it struck him to his core. So much so, he almost shed a tear when he'd gruffly agreed the foundation was a good idea. Nate had called Gemma and Courtney the next day and bought the engagement ring the day after that. "How are you feeling about your parents' wedding?" he asked, sinking deeper into the pillows and tightening his grip around Chris's shoulder. That was another reason they were delaying their wedding. Gemma and Roger were getting married first, and Nate wasn't stupid enough to put Chris through wedding mania twice in a short period of time. He liked his balls attached to his body, thank you.
"Good."
Chris hitched a nonchalant shoulder, but he could tell she was getting choked up.
"We knew it was coming."
Indeed. Roger and Gemma had danced around their relationship for a frustrating 2 years before they bit the bullet and officially started dating. They had progressed at warp speed since then, and their wedding was in 2 months. Nate, in an ill-advised slip of the tongue, had joked to Roger that he'd gotten the whole thing backwards. You were supposed to date and get married before having a child, not after. To be fair, Nate had been jet-lagged and delirious from 72 hours of no sleep, but Roger's menacing scowl reminded him once again why he was an action movie guy and not a comedian.
"It's nice to see my parents together, though," Chris murmured. 2 decades is a long time to go without your other half."
"Ain't that the truth?" Nate went crazy at the thought of 2 days without Chris, much less 2 decades. His out-of-town shoots were the worst. Luckily, they'd perfected the art of long distance, and sometimes Chris found the time to sneak away and surprise him on set.
"It's funny," Chris said. "My study abroad friends always say our year in Shanghai changed their lives, but not me. I met some great people in China, yeah, but it was the summer after that that was the game changer. Meeting you, meeting Mom. It was almost like fate."
"Not almost." Nate brought her hand up to his mouth and kissed her knuckles. "It was fate."
Epilogue. 3 years later. Nate and Chris Reynolds' wedding was dubbed the wedding of the century by the press, bloggers, and gossip rags who followed every detail with breathless anticipation in the months leading up to the big event. 500 of Hollywood's biggest stars at a castle in Italy. A custom-made Sarah Burton for Alexander McQueen wedding dress. A live performance by one of the world's top music superstars. Chris read about the wedding so much, she was sick of it. And she hadn't thought that was possible. It got to where Nate had threatened to cut off her access to the internet if she didn't stop grousing over everything the idiot outlets got wrong. First of all, her wedding dress cost $85,000, not $70,000. Second of all, Riley K was definitely not on the guest list, despite Bobby Raiden's protests. In a strange twist of fate, Bobby was now Nate's publicist, and she seemed to have forgotten about Chris's ill-fated summer assistantship. Either that or she overlooked it because Chris was engaged and soon to be married to one of the most famous actors in the world. Knowing Bobby, it was the latter. Chris didn't begrudge the other woman. She was the one who messed up with the Sabrina Winters shoot, and Bobby was a shark at her job. When Nate told her about his past as an escort, she'd created 5 different rock-solid crisis management plans, depending on how the news leaked and who the source was. Thankfully, they hadn't had to use any of the plans yet. And after 7 years, the statute of limitations for prostitution in California had long run out. So they didn't have to worry about legal ramifications should information about Nate's past ever leak. "You look beautiful," Gemma surveyed her daughter with misty eyes as she cupped Chris's cheek with her hand. "Absolutely beautiful." All thoughts of Bobby, trashy pop stars, and crisis management flew out of Chris's head as a lump rose in her throat. "Thanks, Mom." The mist in Gemma's eyes thickened. It had taken a long time for their relationship to reach the point it was at now. Chris didn't call Gemma Mom until 13 months after she found out the truth. She'd been happy to have her mother back in her life. But when said mother was not who you thought she was, and it was your first time speaking and meeting her in over 20 years, well, they'd had a lot of shit to work out. Which they had. And now, for the first time in her life, Chris felt like she was part of a complete family. Her parents had gotten married 2 years ago in a simple ceremony in the Philippines, where they'd first met. Neither set of Chris's grandparents was alive, so besides the minister, Chris had been the sole witness. And damn it, she'd cried. Tears of joy, but still. It'd been embarrassing. Now it appeared she might repeat her imitation of a fountain. She could already feel the pressure building behind her eyes. "No one cry," Olivia said on cue. "It'll mess up your makeup, and we don't have time to retouch it before the ceremony starts." Thank God for Olivia Tang. The pressure receded, and Chris straightened, her heart pounding for a whole different reason. In less than an hour, she'd officially be Mrs. Chris Reynolds. And she was both excited and nauseated. Excited because, hello, she'd hit the jackpot with a husband like Nate. And she loved him so much she wanted to scream it from the rooftops. Not that she would. How uncouth. Nauseated because she was getting married. And after all these years, all the planning, it seemed surreal that she would be someone's wife. Chris flashed back to the summer after her junior year of college and wondered where the time had gone. She'd been so young, so brash and confident that she didn't want or need the opposite sex, that love wasn't for her, and that men were bores, chores, man-whores, you named it. Look at her now, about to walk down the aisle and profess "till death do us part" in front of 500 people. Nerves shot through Chris's veins and rendered her immobile. "Are you okay?" Gemma asked in Tagalog. Thanks to lessons from her mother, Chris was proficient, if not fluent, in the language. She didn't learn Tagalog for practical purposes. Most Filipinos spoke English, even in the Philippines, where English was an official language. But to connect with her culture, she guessed. Chris had grown up in a wholly Americanized household. And though it never bothered her before, she craved a deeper connection with her cultural roots the older she got. Not just the language, but the history, the music, the customs and superstitions. Though Chris could have done without that last one. Now she was paranoid about the number of stairs in any of her houses being divisible by three, which was considered bad luck. She'd had to redo the entire staircase in her and Nate's new Beverly Hills pad because it had 21 steps. "I'm fine," Chris replied, also in Tagalog. She smoothed a shaky hand over the front of her wedding dress. "Just a little nervous." The last part she said in English. "That's normal," Farrah Lynn said gently. Like the rest of Chris's bridesmaids, she wore a buttercup yellow Lila Rose dress in a cut that best suited her body shape. "Before I walked down the aisle, I was so nauseous I thought I would throw up. But when I saw Blake standing there," a dreamy look overtook her face, "all the nerves disappear, and you only see him." "I hope not, because I'm not marrying Blake," Chris quipped. "Polygamy is not my thing." Laughter ripped throughout the suite, and Farrah scrunched her nose with a smile. "Very funny. You know what I mean." "I know." This time, Chris was the one who squeezed Farrah's arm. "Thank you for being here. All of you." She gazed around at the other women in the room. Her mom, Courtney, her maid of honor, Olivia and Farrah, whom she'd met in Shanghai a lifetime ago and who had, against all odds, stayed two of her closest friends despite time and distance. And Skylar, her soon-to-be sister-in-law, who gazed back at her with a ginormous smile and shimmering eyes. "Of course we're here, like we would miss this." Courtney's dark blue eyes lit up with a mixture of love and mischief. "Besides, after your bachelorette party..." A chorus of groans interrupted her. "Oh, God, don't remind me," Olivia covered her eyes. I'll never be able to look at a lollipop the same way. Chris's wild bachelorette getaway at an adults-only resort in Jamaica was unforgettable for sure. Except for all the moments they had forgotten after blacking out from too much alcohol. Then there were the moments Chris wished she'd forgotten, like the beach incident, and the lollipop incident, and the... I was going to say, after your bachelorette party, we, want to make sure your wedding goes off without a hitch. Courtney cleared her throat. Anyway, we love you and wish you all the happiness and great sex in the world, minus the lollipops. Gemma coughed delicately. Sorry, Mrs. C, Courtney added. Do I want to know about the... No, Chris and her bridesmaids replied at the same time. Gemma shook her head. That's probably for the best. Trust me, Chris said, it is. After a few more minutes of shooting the breeze and fussing with their hair and makeup, Courtney announced it was time to head down. This is it. Chris's hand trembled as she picked up her wedding bouquet. Her nerves increased twofold, zinging through her body like out-of-control ping-pong balls. They stayed with her as she, her mom, and her bridesmaids made their way to the castle's grand hall, where the ceremony was being held. Her father, the ring-bearer, Nate's cousin, the flower girl, Chris's cousin on her father's side, and Janet, the wedding planner, were already waiting by the closed doors leading into the hall. Gemma gave her husband a quick kiss, and Chris another loving squeeze, before she slipped into the hall so she could take her seat in the first row as the mother of the bride.
Look at you. Roger clasped Chris's hands while Janet shuffled them into the order of procession. My daughter, getting married. I can't believe it.
Don't cry, Daddy, Chris warned, her throat tight. I can't take that chance. My mascara isn't waterproof. He laughed, though the sound came out more watery than usual.
Understood.
He kissed her cheek.
I love you.
The tightness increased. I love you too.
Then someone flung the doors open. The chords of the wedding march soared into the great hall, and the wedding party filed out one by one until it was Chris's turn. She took a deep breath and stepped into the hall, grateful for her father's strength by her side. 500 pairs of eyes locked onto her as she walked down the long, white-carpeted aisle. But Chris ignored them, her gaze drawn to the only man who mattered. Nate stood at the altar next to Elijah, his best man. Nate's golden-brown hair gleamed beneath the lights, and he filled out his black Tom Ford tuxedo so well it should be illegal. His eyes blazed with so much love and adoration, Chris couldn't breathe. Just like that, her nerves disappeared. Pharaoh was right. Chris could only see the man she loved. And she couldn't believe she'd ever been nervous about marrying him. When she reached the altar, he flashed that slow, sexy smile of his, the one reserved just for her. And Chris's bones turned liquid. And after they said their vows, and the minister proclaimed them husband and wife, and Nate kissed her senseless to a resounding chorus of claps and catcalls, Chris knew, deep within her bones, that everything had turned out exactly the way it was meant to.
They held the wedding reception on the castle's enormous grounds, where a mini-city of tents, lights, and tables reigned. A good number of guests were fellow Hollywood people, but everyone Nate and Chris cared about was there, too. Their families, including Marty, who had stopped dicking around after Nate hit it big and was now one of the most sought-after agents in the biz. Chris's study abroad friends from Shanghai, mentor staff with whom Chris had particularly bonded over the years. Risa, the Carrera's retired L.A. housekeeper who ran a thriving banana bread business after Nate shouted her out on social. At age 68, she was the internet's favorite baking grandma. Nate's closest pre-Hollywood friends were in attendance as well, including his best man Elijah and groomsman Will, who'd lent Nate his boat all those summers ago. The boat now belonged to Nate and Chris. Nate had bought it from Will as a 5-year dating anniversary present for Chris. He could have bought any number of bigger, newer boats, but none of them held the same sentimental value. Nate also spotted Teague and his family, with whom he'd spent quite a few holidays by now, given how serious Teague and Skylar were. He wouldn't be surprised if Teague popped the question soon, though Nate would never admit it out loud. He could have a worse brother-in-law than a wave-surfing, plane-flying, computer-hacking film animator. He'd still break Teague's face if he hurt Skylar, though. Teague's father and Linda had split up 2 years ago, citing irreconcilable differences. Nate wasn't sure if Stephen Collins ever found out about Linda's indiscretion while they were dating, as neither he nor Roger had clued him in. No one wanted to open that can of worms. But Stephen looked so happy with his new girlfriend it didn't matter. The reception ran into the early hours of the morning. It was a wild, exultant affair, filled with the expected, Courtney leading a conga line, Chris's friend Luke Peterson from Shanghai, whom she always complained about for being so uncouth, burping out the alphabet to the fascination and disgust of other guests. And the unexpected, Scott West dancing with Susan, the mentor director. Nate's father and his girlfriend Diana getting down to the latest Cardi B hit with surprising skill. But nothing shocked Nate more than the scene he stumbled on when he tried to sneak a private moment with his wife. Wife. The word sent all sorts of emotions swirling through his body. When he'd seen Chris walk down that aisle, resplendent and beaming and, dare he say it, teary-eyed, he'd been afraid he would break down himself. Luckily, he spared himself the embarrassment and kept it together throughout the ceremony, the receiving line, the best man and maid of honor toasts, the cake cutting. Jesus, weddings were long. As much as Nate appreciated his friends and family's well wishes, he wanted to be alone with his wife. Not to spoil their wedding night, because he wasn't an asshole, but because he needed a breather from all the people and a moment to connect with Chris. Ironic how it was their wedding day, and yet they'd had less than 5 minutes alone together so far. "Where are we going?" Chris laughed as he tugged her closer to the castle, where there were plenty of shrubberies and marble statues to get lost in. He'd have opted for a room in the castle itself, except there were a zillion stairs leading to the back entrance, and the building was a maze. No one had time for that. "Wherever Janet can't find us," Nate said, naming their highly organized, highly scary wedding planner. He spotted the purse-lipped woman out of the corner of his eye and quickened his pace, pulling Chris around the corner just before Janet's eyes homed in on them. Chris landed against his chest and he tightened his arms around her. She glowed beneath the moonlight, her silk reception dress pouring over her curves like cream, and Nate marveled for the millionth time how lucky he was to have her by his side. "Hey there, Mrs. Reynolds," he said, his mouth curling up into a satisfied grin. She smirked, no doubt spotting the devilish glint in his eyes. "Mr. Reynolds, are you trying to seduce me at our wedding reception? Next to..." She glanced at the statue towering next to them. "A statue of Cupid? Well played." He hadn't noticed Cupid hovering there like a creeper until now. But what do you know? Even the gods and castle grounds layout were on his side. "Of course not," Nate feigned innocence. A sound to their left interrupted him. Nate's eyebrows shot up to the sky when Olivia and Sammy tumbled out of the shrubbery on the other side of Cupid, clothes rumpled, hair mussed, and... was that a hickey on Sammy's neck? Damn. Go Sammy. Nate didn't know too much about the pair's backstory, but he did know that they used to date in Shanghai, that they'd broken up the summer after returning to the States, and that they'd hated each other ever since. Nate had witnessed their animosity firsthand several times. "Animosity and sexual tension," he amended. Though judging by the state of their clothing and their deer-in-headlights expressions when they saw Nate and Chris, that tension had just found a release valve. "Hello?" Chris said, her voice suspiciously bland. "Nice night for a stroll,"
It was fascinating watching Olivia and Sammy turn the color of a fire hydrant at the same time.
Yeah.
Olivia took a tiny step away from her ex-boyfriend.
I'm going to rejoin the party. See if anyone needs help.
She ran off like a bat out of hell. Sammy watched her leave, his face grim and hard. Everything good? Nate asked. The other man looked like he couldn't decide whether he wanted to chase Olivia down for a repeat of whatever they'd been doing, or drink himself into a stupor.
All good, Sammy flashed a tight smile. Congrats again, guys. The wedding was beautiful, and the reception is kick-ass. But I'm beat, so I'm gonna call it a night.
He paused.
If you could, keep this...
Don't worry, Chris said. We won't tell anyone. Sammy responded with a quick nod and left for the castle, which doubled as a hotel and where several guests had opted to stay for the wedding weekend.
Talk about surprises, Nate said once the other man was out of earshot.
Sammy and Olivia, huh?
Part due in the works.
Chris shook her head.
They're worse than Blake and Farah. At least they got over their shit and worked it out. But Liv and Sam have been doing this dance for years, and it's exhausting. Not that it's any of my business.
Really? Nate sized up his wife with a suspicious glare. So you're going to be hands-off their relationship or whatever they have going on?
Until I get bored. Though Liv, ironically, is the biggest meddler out of all of us,
Chris mused, tapping a finger on her chin.
Says the woman who once paid someone $15,000 to get rid of her father's fiancé.
Technically $7,500 since Nate hadn't completed the contract terms, but who was counting? She gasped.
I can't believe you're bringing that up. First of all, that wasn't meddling, that was protecting my father's heart and money. Second of all, I happen to know that scheme worked out well for all parties involved.
A short pause.
Except for a certain redhead.
Gloria, Nate remembered. He hadn't thought of her in years. Wonder what happened to her. Chris hitched a shoulder.
Don't know, don't care. She's in the past.
How enlightened of you, he teased.
He stroked her cheek with the back of his hand, thinking of the day they'd met in the parking lot outside Alchemy. She, icy and guarded, he, wary and defensive, both with chips the size of glaciers on their shoulders. How much life had changed since then.
That was the best deal I ever made, Nate said. More than any multi-million-dollar movie contract or endorsement for sure, because it had brought Chris into his life.
You think so?
She looped her arms around his neck.
Because I think I got the better end of the deal. A couple $1,000s and you're mine for the rest of our lives.
Damn right.
Nate lowered his head until his forehead rested against hers.
And you're mine.
Always.
But as they kissed beneath the stars of the Italian countryside, they knew the price of their love wasn't measured by money, but by their hearts. One's heart in exchange for the other's, forever. It was a hell of a deal.
This concludes If Love Had a Price by Anna Huang. Narrated by Cindy Kay and Aiden Snow. Copyright 2020 by Anna Huang. This unabridged audiobook is published by arrangement with Anna Huang, care of Brower Literary and Management, and was produced in the year 2022 by Tantor Media Incorporated, a division of Recorded Books which holds the copyright thereto. Please visit Tantor.com for more information on our growing library of unabridged audiobooks.